Sort of, anyway. Favoring his right leg, Doc struggled to stand. The black powder charges from the Lama dribbling out of the holster and down his leg like black blood.
How inconvenient. By any chance, does anybody see my stick?
Over here!
Dean splashed across the water. By a rotting tree, he plunged his hands into the silt and pulled the ebony sword stick free.
I saw the light flashing off the silver.
Thank you, lad. Good show.
Doc twisted the lion's head handle and pulled out the sword for inspection. The steel was foggy with condensation, but otherwise undamaged. Dean shrugged.
No prob.
His limp fedora perched on a stick to dry. JB was sitting on the undamaged raft, holding his glasses by the stems and rinsing them in the seawater. Knife in hand, Jack stood nearby, staring hard at the desolate land stretching before them. It resembled his home of Louisiana.
Clean blasters.
Sliding the patch to the front of his face, Ryan looked about and saw nothing of possible menace.
Explain.
Jack frowned.
Swamp's alive. Lots of life. Snakes, rats. Not here, but could be.
Heeding the sage advice, the companions moved to the raft and got busy. Sparingly using the clean water from the canteens, they cleaned their weapons and made sure each was in working order. Then, with guards posted, they attempted to clean themselves. Dean found a depression in the land 2 feet deep, and they washed as thoroughly as possible in the makeshift tub.
What's wrong with the soap?
JB was trying to work up a lather in his hands.
This is salt water.
Mildred poured another skimmed cup of swamp water over her hair. More silt rinsed out of her beaded plaits.
It takes a special kind of soap to foam in brine.
Swell.
After the ablutions, somewhat cleaner and pounds lighter, the companions sat on the raft eating cold MRE rations. The warm water rose to their knees, and they closely watched the surface for undulating ripples that meant the presence of snakes. Swamps were the worst kind of terrain to cross. Mud weighed you down, great holes could open beneath you at any step, the air was thick and difficult to breathe, plus most of the animals were poisonous. Chewing a ration bar, Dean glanced at the waterfall.
Looks like we walk from here.
Where is here?
Christy's hair flexed and waved around her, as if drying itself in the pale gray sunlight.
I checked earlier.
JB talked around a mouthful of peanut butter and graham crackers. He took a pull of water to clear his throat.
We're still in North Carolina, about 20 miles from the Tennessee border.
That's good news.
Ryan wiped the inside of a metallic foil bag with a finger to get the last of the military cheese. The stuff was gray, but he knew that was the normal color of cheese. Carrot juice was normally added to make it more appetizing, but he guessed the MRE packs were designed to be cheap, as well as last forever. Placing aside an empty envelope of corned beef hash, Mildred rinsed her spoon clean and tucked it into a pocket.
Well, if it's any comfort, there's no way the Blues will ever find us out here.
She gestured at the empty expanse. Removing her coat, Christy hung the garment over a dead tree. It had felt as if she were carrying another person on her shoulders.
Hate to leave the supplies. But I suppose there's no way to haul them along.
We can make backpacks.
Ryan stood. Waiting around the stationary raft, he peeled away the canvas sheet and took stock of the jumbled boxes.
Bare essentials, only food and ammo. We each get 1 grand. JB gets the rest of the explosives, Mildred any medical supplies. Leave the rest.
Dry socks. Live in swamp. Dry socks save feet.
He's right. This place is a breeding ground for fungus. We'll change our socks every time we break for food, and I'll spare some sulfur to try and keep out infections.
Doc fluffed the muddy frills of his shirt.
Swamps. Sweet nature's toilet.
Everybody laughed, but it was Mildred's comment that struck a resonating chord with Ryan, and once again he debated the wisdom of their goal. Should they be heading for the town of Shiloh, or the site of the infamous Civil War battle? The historic Shiloh was only a few miles away from a redoubt. Shilohville won the debate because it was closer. JB wiped off his palms with a moist towelette included in the MRE pack.
Might as well get moving. Miles to go before we sleep and all that, eh, Doc?
Without a doubt, my friend.
As the companions rose, the raft moved unexpectedly, floating to the surface of the dirty water.
Dark night!
Salt water is more buoyant than fresh.
Christy lifted a boot and inspected the watermark level.
Is this deep enough?
Mildred pushed at the logs with a hand, and they moved.
Seems so, yeah.
There's no current. Are we going to drag it behind?
Splashing closer, Ryan was already at the rear of the craft, lifting the mooring lines from the mulch and testing their strength.
Half of us will push. The rest can drag.
Rows upon rows of cots filled the makeshift hospital of Front Royal, temporarily located inside the long dining hall of Cawdor Castle. The great table had been moved to the end of the hall and converted into a surgical bed, leather straps draped over the blood-stained surface to hold down the sec men who needed limbs removed or other major surgery. The Ville's supply of pre-dark ether had been used up the first day, and now the healer poured shine down the throats of his patients until they fell unconscious. Thankfully, the screams of agony hadn't been heard in days. The seriously hurt were out of their misery, dead and buried, either from the wounds they received in battle or from the meatball surgery trying to save them. The rest of the brown shirts and civilians lay on the simple cots, waiting for medical attention to their bullet wounds and stumps. The air reeked of feces, whiskey, and blood, and the painful moaning never stopped day or night. Several of the local gaudy sluts moved among the patients, emptying bedpans into a wheelbarrow they pushed along. In this time of emergency, everybody in the Ville worked. On the other side of the long hall, a pair of children carried a steaming wooden bucket of freshly brewed tea from the kitchen. Carefully, they filled the cup next to each cot. If the cup was full, they dumped it on the floor and filled it with fresh. Made from old willow bark, healer Mildred had said the brew would help some of the wounded with their pain. Amazingly, it did with some, but others not at all. Kneeling alongside a sec man who had been crushed by falling rocks during the war, the new healer adjusted the folded blanket under his head.
There. Is that better?
No. Neck still hurts.
Irritably, Sullivan grabbed the trooper by the throat and savagely twisted. There was a snap, and the patient went limp.
See? I said that I could end your pain.
There was no reply. Moving to the next patient, Sullivan found the man soundly asleep. Good. They should all fall asleep, then die. There were plenty of troops in the world to replace them, so why did Baron Cawdor worry about a few damaged people? It just made no sense. But then, Sullivan's job wasn't to be logical or reasonable, just to murder the Baron and leave. Nothing more. Of course, the Baron was surrounded by a squad of trigger-happy sec men, so the chilling would take some special planning. Awake and carving a pipe from a corn cob, the next patient merely had two broken legs that were setting nicely. Sullivan set the bones himself and made the cast from leather belts and kindling. Pretending to be a healer was his easiest disguise. It was impossible to torture people for years and not to learn something about how to keep them alive. Being zealous in the questioning was a beginner's mistake. Cut off a man's hand, and he would bleed to death in minutes. Ah, but bind the arm with twine to retard the circulation, then cut off the hand, and your patient could live for days. Any damn fool could stab to death a man chained to the wall, but it took an artist to teasingly peel off every inch of skin and still keep the prisoner alive and sane. The door to the kitchen eased open, and a woman rushed into the dining room. Adjusting the moist bandages on a burned face, Sullivan noted her arrival with interest. Few of the locals seemed to be in any hurry these days. It was as if the war had drained them of not only their strength, but also their very will to live. The newcomer was plump and full-breasted, highly attractive for her species. She looked over the hospital with obvious distaste, nose wrinkling at the pungent stink. Sullivan didn't like the smell either. But it was either suffer the stink or open the windows and have the patients freeze to death at night. Personally, he preferred the latter. Extremes of temperature meant little to his kind. With a start, she saw him looming over a patient and hurried over, holding her skirts in a fist to keep the cloth from touching the dead and dying.
Sullivan! They know! Run for the...